Later this morning in the Victorian Parliament, the Premier, Daniel Andrews, together with the Health Minister, Jill Hennessy, will for the first time provide us with some of the details for Victoria's landmark voluntary assisted dying laws. Jill Hennessy, the Health Minister in the Andrews State Labor Government, joins me this morning, and off the back of a personal tragedy, the death of her own mother, this particular debate has taken on some extra relevance and poignancy. Health Minister Jill Hennessy, good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
And with your permission, and thank you, can you tell us about your mum? It's clearly helped frame your attitude to this entire issue.
My mum was not only a Catholic, but a person that supported assisted dying. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was a little girl, and for a lot of her life she lived very well with that illness and disease. However, that illness and disease started to take things from her life that were incredibly important to her. And she would regularly talk about her frustration at not being able to have some control and some say in her own death, because she was smart enough to know what MS was going to do to her body as she moved towards the end of her life. And at the end of her life, she was effectively a functioning quadriplegic. She was about 36 kilograms. She was in formal care. Her skin would rip. She was unable to eat. She was on a catheter that, previously would regularly get infected, giving her urinary tract infections and long stays in intensive care units. The horror and the brutality of MS was known to her, and she would regularly talk about how frustrated she felt that her views, her desire, her capacity and competence to make a different decision about how she wanted the end of her life to be was something she felt was very, very unfair. And that's obviously been something that has impacted both my commitment to this issue, but my understanding of the sense of powerlessness that people feel when they're vulnerable and they're terminally ill or they've got a progressive disease.
Your mother died just weeks ago. You've been dealing with this since you were elected to government and kept the commitment to introduce this legislation. Quite frankly, how have you been able to hold it together while your mother's been in such decline, whilst discussing this as if it was an abstract issue when it's not? It's so deeply personal.
It's been very tough, to be honest, John. You know, I and you can hear the lump in my throat now because...
I've got one too.
my grief is still very, very raw. I spend a lot of time in toilets wiping my eyes and going home and crying. But I also know that there are so many people and so many other patients in Victoria that are also experiencing that. And every Saturday I would give my mum an update about how I was going in the drafting and the development of this bill. And every Saturday she'd say, keep going, love, keep going. And
take whatever time you need.
I'm very sad that she didn't get the chance to see the introduction of this bill, but I know that she would fundamentally believe that it is something that was fair and compassionate for other people to potentially access in the future. And putting humanity and compassion and the pain of the end of life is something that I think we need to shine a light on. And whilst I've had to soldier on, I don't feel any shame about my grief or about my own vulnerability in light of losing my mum.
And thank you for, before this interview, having said, yes, it's okay if you want to ask me about my mother. I want the audience to be absolutely clear that that was not in any part an intrusion. It was done with your consent. Now, let's try to put the emotion aside, which I guess you're going to have to do all the way through some months now of public and parliamentary debate. Yesterday, three former heads of the AMA, three respected medical doctors, heads of the Doctors Association, three of them said there's not enough emphasis on palliative care here and they oppose this legislation, as do many other groups in the community.
There's no question that there are different people in the community that have different views. And just as we utilised Brian Aller, another respected AMA president, to help develop this model, it is important to remember that we've got to listen to the more quiet voices as well. And all of our research tells us that at least 85% of the community do support a change. And I want to really emphasise the status quo. And as the coroner has pointed out again and again, there are people with terminal illnesses that are taking their own lives in very violent and lonely circumstances now. And there are simply some degrees of pain that palliative care can't support, and that was evidenced by many of the submissions that were put to the parliamentary inquiry and to the ministerial advisory panel. So I respect the views of those that don't support change. There is provision in the draft bill for doctors to conscientiously object, but we have a problem now, and I fundamentally believe that the vast majority of community want to see change, but I want this to be a respectful debate. I'm well aware of those doctors' views, just as I'm well aware of many other doctors that are advocating for change.
Can we go through the safeguards? No matter how many times you try and your colleagues try to explain this, there will still be people listening right now, out of the hundreds of thousands of people who are listening, who want to be reassured. What actually are the safeguards to prevent any abuse of this law if it's introduced?
There's a really limited eligibility criteria.
And what are they?
So a person would have to be diagnosed with an incurable disease, illness or medical condition. By more than one doctor, by two doctors. That disease must be advanced, progressive and will cause death within weeks or months, but not longer than 12 months. It must be causing suffering that can't be relieved in a manner that the person deems tolerable. A mental illness or disability will not satisfy the eligibility criteria.
So Alzheimer's, dementia, absolutely not within the scope of these laws.
Not within the scope of these laws, and in fact, much to the disappointment of many who advocated to that effect. But a person's capability and competence is an essential part of the check and balance. Two doctors need to make assessments. The request needs to be made three times. Those doctors need to be doctors of significant experience. One of those doctors needs to be a person that has expertise in that illness and condition. Those doctors will also be required to undertake some mandated training. Part of that training and part of the eligibility assessment will mean that those doctors not only have to assess if that person is eligible, but whether or not that person may be suffering from any other condition that impacts upon their competence, whether or not that person may be the subject of any form of coercion. There is a cooling off period. There is an assisted dying review board. There is the requirement for independent witnesses at every juncture for all of the forms, and those witnesses are not allowed to be people that might benefit in any way from a will or any form of other financial benefit. Aged care providers are not allowed to be witnesses, are not allowed to suggest assisted dying to any of their residents. This is a finely calibrated bill. It's been drafted after 2.5 years. It has more checks and balances than any other model in the world, and we feel absolutely confident that this is a model that will ensure that people are able to make these decisions safely in a supportive environment with the vulnerable protected, and that those that feel they might be at risk of coercion will not be exposed in the process of the development of this law.
One more question about this, and then a question about flu vaccines and the like as well, if I may please, Minister.
Sure.
The opponents of this say, well, you'll bring it in with all those safeguards, but there's nothing to stop a parliament 2 years, 5 years, 10, 20 years from now reducing those safeguards, and what they call is like bracket creep. They're saying it'll extend, it'll grow and impact on people other than those you initially bring it in for.
Look, the slippery slope is a very familiar argument used by opponents to assisted dying. I would point to what's occurred in Oregon, for example, where we've had a very similar model in place for over 20 years without any change. Yes, it's true, I cannot predict what a parliament in 20 years might do. However, I can say that the process in developing this, a very modest, a highly regulated law that may or may not get through the parliament, I'm hoping it will, I cannot imagine the set of political circumstances where those kind of henny penny, the sky will fall in, charges that our opponents make would be the beneficiary of political support in the parliament.
And it can't happen without there being a public debate.
Precisely.
In the same way as we're having one now.
And precisely. And this, I think it is important to remember in this reform for assisted dying, its genesis was in actually the parliament being at its best. A Liberal, a Labor, Sex Party and Greens group of MPs came together to talk about the possibility of reform and what such a model might look like.
Yep.
Bringing together people from across the parliament, I think it's one of those instances where the parliament can be at its best. You cannot get anything through our parliament in Victoria unless you have the support of other political parties and individuals. So I can't foresee those circumstances of the slippery slope argument ever coming into effect. And in fact, the experience overseas in Oregon, for example, has been that there's been no change for 20 years.
Very briefly, I don't want to make you late for your big announcements and press conferences. Are we going to run out of flu vaccine? And we've seen more tragedies in the last even 24 hours.
We have indeed. No, we're working very, very hard to ensure that there's adequate supply of flu vaccine. We've got very good national and international processes to that event. But we are, you know, this is a really horror flu. We've had 13,500 notifications to date in Victoria, double the amount last year. Queensland has had triple the amount of flu. New South Wales, double the amount of flu. WA, interestingly, has not been affected, so we've got an eastern seaboard issue. What we know about this strain of flu is that it is not just impacting upon the elderly who are vulnerable and might have other conditions that make fighting off the flu particularly challenging. We're increasingly seeing younger Australians and being impacted by this strain of influenza. So we're really wanting to say to people, go and get vaccinated. Don't dismiss the symptoms of flu. And we're starting a conversation with the Commonwealth about perhaps it's time for us to get the flu vax, at least for children and other vulnerable groups, more accessible by virtue of being free.
Minister, again, condolences to you on the recent loss of your mother, and we will see what prevails, whether the numbers come your way or not in the Parliament and in the debates in the days and weeks to come. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, John.